starting day of the Terraway, Northwest London, Sunday, 3rd of Kislev, 7th November, Rabbi Pini Dunner, coming and going, Vayetze Drush from UK Parashonim of yesteryear. This week's Terraway has been sponsored by family Dunner, the Chved Simchus and Asun of Avrom Yisrom and Rivki Dunner. Shetishchaim, Mit Hashem B'Simantov, Mazel Tov, B'Yom Sheni, Dalit Kislev, 8th of November. Yerotzon Shivnu Bayis Nemon Bisro Lashem Ulishilo.
Thank you, Ronnie. Thank you, everyone, for being here. Thank you, everyone, who's listening online. And it's a great pleasure to be back here to say a few words, Divrei Torah. I'm going to take my watch off, not so that I don't know the time, but so that I do know the time. I was asked to say something about anything that takes my fancy, but to include some historical footnotes, because apparently I'm known for Jewish history. And so I'm going to say some Divrei Torah, which I saw in the Sefer of Reb Tzvi Hirschfelber. And not just from Reb Tzvi Hirschfelber, I'm going to tell you a little bit about him, although I know a lot about him. I only have half an hour. I could speak for half an hour just about Reb Tzvi Hirschfelber. Reb Tzvi Hirschfelber, I saw that at the end of this week, you have Rabbi Gurwitz from Chaya Olim Yeshiva who's going to speak. And he's a great-grandson of Reb Tzvi Hirschfelber, who came before the First World War. He came to London. He's a Yelid Slabodka. He was born in Slabodka. He remembered Rabbi Yitzchak Chonon, because Kovna and Slabodka are across the river from each other. And he learned in private yeshivas in Slabodka. He didn't learn in the famous Slabodka yeshiva. He was actually a very close friend. His family were close friends with the Alter of Nevardik, who many people don't know, lived in Slabodka. And, you know, many Nevardik yeshivas all across that area of Eastern Europe. But the Alter of Nevardik lived in Slabodka. The Alter of Slabodka also lived in Slabodka, but he had one yeshiva, later on two yeshivas, one in Hebron. Rav Ferber came to be a meshulach for the Nevardik yeshiva in England. He was a fantastic speaker. He was an incredible darshan, as we know from his svarim. And he came and everybody wanted to hire him as a rabbi. So he went. In one of his trips, he went to Manchester. He became a rabbi in Manchester. He realized that the Kehillah in Manchester was not going to survive beyond one generation because there was no yeshiva in Manchester. He opened Manchester Yeshiva. And he hired Rav Segal, Rav Moshe Yitzchok Segal, who was the father of the Manchester Rosh Yeshiva, who was a sheikhet in London, who was unable to survive on the paltry sum that they were giving him, hired him to be the Rosh Yeshiva, and then he was offered two jobs, one in Leeds, or Liverpool, I think, and the other one in London, in Soho. There was a new emerging community in Soho in London. Incredible to think that. And he came to London. There was a Talmud Torah school there, and was tailors, and I would say lower middle class, people who just emerged from the East End, but hadn't made it in any kind of wealth. They lived in Soho, and they had this shul. And the shul was very close to the British Museum. Before the British Library moved to its current location, the British Museum held the British Library. He was so trusted by the staff of the British Museum, they gave him a key to the British Library. And he would go there and sit for hours, sometimes days at a time, looking at the manuscripts in the British Library. He had access, just open shelf policy for Rav Tzvi Hirschfelber. So many of his Divrei Torah are taken from Parshonim, whose manuscripts he'd looked through. They were never published. I'm going to say one today, which is incredible. And he would publish them in his Svarim. He published over 20 Svarim. He retired in 1955. He never left Soho. He died in 1966. And he left many children. He had one daughter who looked after him. And he had a son who was a Rav somewhere in East London. I can't remember. I think Wanstead and Woodford, if I remember correctly. And he also had one daughter who never got married. The reason I know so much information about Rav Ferber is because he left over memoirs. He wrote Zichronos, two volumes of Zichronos. Nobody knew about them. They came up on auction in the late 1990s at a crazy price. And the Soicher, who's no longer alive, tried to get the money. He couldn't get the money for that he wanted for these Zichronos. So as a result, he just, you know, what happens is, you don't sell it, you take it back. Once I knew they existed, he was a crazy collector of what's called Americana. Anything that was ever published in America or about America, in Loshon HaKodesh or by Jews, he collected. And I had various pieces that he didn't have. And eventually, it took quite some time, we did an exchange. I gave him those pieces, and I obtained the Zichronos of Rav Ferber. And I'm publishing the first volume in the next few months. I've been writing footnotes for about 10 years, and it's all in Loshon HaKodesh, and I'm going to be publishing them in the next few months. Hopefully, watch this space, and you'll be able to find out much more about Rav Tzvi Schwerber than I could tell you in the past 5 minutes. But let's look at Parshas Vayetze in the eyes of one of the great Parshonim of the United Kingdom. Rav Tzvi Schwerber lived in the United Kingdom. He was an incredible darshan. He wrote incredible svarim. He was a London as well, but he spent most of his life on Drush, writing svarim on the Parsha, on Yomim Tovim, on all kinds of things. I'm not sure if the svarim are still available. Perhaps they are. I know that Jonathan Weingarten republished them at some point. I'm not sure they're still. If they are available, I'd say you should get your hands on them. Vayetze Yaakov mi be'er shova vayelech charona. So we all know that this Vayetze Yaakov, at least in the eyes of Rashi, the words Vayetze Yaakov seem a bit superfluous. They don't make sense in the pasuk. Lo yotzarech lichtoiv elo vayelech Yaakov charona, says Rashi, right? You don't have to write Vayetze Yaakov mi be'er shova. We know that. V'lomais kiri tziyosoi, says Rashi, v'lo magid shi tziyas tzadik menamokem oise roishem, shebizman sha tzadik bo'ir, hu hoida, hu ziva, hu hadoro. That's what Rashi says. The beauty, the distinction, the incredible power that a tzadik brings to a city is when he's there. What happens when he's gone? Yetzi misham, pona hoida, pona. Yotza Misham, Pona Hoida, Pona Ziva, Pona Hadora. So the answer as to why we have Vayetze Yaakov at the beginning of the Pasuk is because it's to tell us that Be'er Sheva was no longer the same because Yaakov Avinu left. It sounds like a good answer, right? Rashi really, he captured us with this one. I want to tell you something. I've spoken a few times since I'm here in London. And I spoke on Thursday night in St. John's Wood Synagogue. They opened up, they have starting a new Chabura program. I think you should all go. They're starting a new Chabura program. You should find someone in St. John's Wood and learn with them. It would be a good thing. I spoke about Rashi. We see the Chumash, we see the narrative of the Torah through the eyes of Rashi. And Rashi did an incredible job. He had a grandson called Rashbam. You ever heard of Rashbam? Rashbam, and by the way, I'm descended from Rashi. 25 generations. I'm descended from the daughter of Rashi through the Rivan. My wife is also descended from Rashi from the same daughter. You know how we know this? You can do genealogical research if you come from Germany, because the Germans kept good records. So 25 generations. So through another daughter, the son was the Rashbam, right? Rav Shmuel ben Meir. Rashbam, so let's work it out. If Rashi was born around 1040, died 1105. So let's say the Rashbam was born, let's say, about 40 years after Rashi, was his grandson, which means that he died when the Rashbam was 25. But the Rashbam says he learnt b'chavrusa with Rashi. So we don't know exactly when, but it must be in the last few years of Rashi's life, when he was in his teens and early 20s. That's when the Rashbam learnt with him. And at some point he challenged Rashi. He writes, he says, Grandpa, Zayda, whatever it is you called grandparents in Alsace and Lorraine, whatever it was, Grandpapa, he says to him, Opa, we've got very different versions, I wasn't there. He says, the parish that you wrote on Chumash is full of chazals, and it's not actually always pshat in the posuk. You take Midrashim, it's fascinating material, but it's not pshat, it's not literal understanding of the psukim. And Rashi says to him, this is what the Rashbam writes, you're absolutely right. And if I had the koyach, I would rewrite the whole Perush on Chumash. So Rashbam, as a result of this, took upon himself to rewrite what he felt Rashi would write as a Perush on Chumash. And he wrote, and it's a much briefer, much more literal understanding of the pshat in the psukim of the Torah. And that's the Perush of the Rashbam on Chumash. I'll tell you what's so curious. If you look at Rashi on the Gemara, Rashi on the Gemara is completely different in style than the Rashi on Chumash. Rashi on Chumash is full of chazals. Obviously, Rashi is writing on chazal, on Gemara. He's not going to quote chazals. There, he's literal, very all to do with pshat, to the extent that sometimes he completely ignores an alternative source, which is what his grandchildren and the Balei Tosfos did. They would say, excuse me, Rashi, how could you write this as a pshat in the Gemara? Another Gemara says something different, but Rashi wasn't concerned about that other thing. You know, Pnei Yeshua was the great defender of Rashi. And very often he says, no, there's a pshat in the Gemara. Okay, you've got a kasha from another place. We'll see if we can reconcile it. Very often he finds a good answer as to why Rashi didn't quote the other source. But the point is that Rashi wasn't there to write Tosfos. Rashi was there to write Rashi. But if you look at Rashi on the Chumash, Rashi is more like a Tosfos on Chumash than he is as he is on the Rashi and the Gemara. So you see that whereas he was often, he often used a lot of information when he wrote the Perush on Chumash, when he came to Gemara, not so much information. Let's think about the Rashbam. You ever learnt Rashbam, Baba Basra? It's completely the opposite. The Rashbam becomes like Tosfos. Why? Because he was one of the Balei Tosfos. So he writes in the style of Tosfos as a Perush on the Gemara. Whereas Rashi, so it's complete opposite. When he comes to write, Rashbam writes on Chumash, he writes like he thinks his grandfather should have written. And Rashi writes, like the Rashbam writes on the Gemara, he writes on Chumash. Why am I telling you all this? Because I'm about to explain to you that this particular perish of Rashi on the Yetzir Yaakov Be'er Shova doesn't make sense. He's quoting a Chazal, and the Chazal has got nothing whatsoever to do with this question. What was the question? We started off with a question. Vayetze Yaakov. We don't need the words Vayetze Yaakov in the Pasuk. So now let's look at the Medrash. That's where Rashi comes from. Rashi is basically, he is echoing Chazal. Let's see what he says. I'm going to ask you another question before we get to the Chazal. Where did he go? Vayelechorona. Choron or Padan Aram, it's the same thing. I'm not going to talk about that today, why Padan Aram and Choron are the same thing. So, but we already said he went to Padan Aram, right? At the end of Parshas Toldos. I hope you were concentrating yesterday during laning. But we said that he went to Padan Aram. So why are we saying it again? You could say, Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Shava. Why? Because he went out of the city. And a tzaddik leaves the city, then the city suffers. What are we writing that he went to Choron for? It's not relevant to that pshat, right? And if Choron is going to be mentioned, why do you have to write that he left and he came? Especially if Choron was already mentioned. He already left. Why write that he came? So the Medrash says as follows. V'chiloi yotzum isham elahu asks the Medrash. It's a Medrash Rabbah. Look it up. Is he the only one who left? Vayetze Yaakov. Not Vayetze'u Yaakov im whatever. Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Shova, says the Medrash, he's the only one that left. He went with a whole entourage. So what do you mean, Vayetze Yaakov? He went on his own? Doesn't make any sense. The Adamar Vayetze Yaakov, so Rabbi Azaria b'shem Rabbi Yehuda bar Simon Omar. He comes up with a pshat. What's the pshat? Bizman shat tzadik ba'ir, hu ziva, hu hadora. Yotze misham. Pona ziva, pona hadora. That's the Medrash. What was the question of the Medrash? It's in the singular, it should be in the plural. What's the question of Rashi? Why does it say Vayetze Yaakov? So Rashi adopts this pshat to answer a question that the Medrash never even had, and the question doesn't make any sense. So what's Rashi doing? Rashi, this is what the Rashbam's complaint was. Rashi wants to insert a very powerful lesson from Chazal into the beginning of the Parsha. And he wants to do it on the basis of a question that he's got. So he takes this, a bit of a magpie, he takes this medrash and uses it as the way to answer this question. But the only thing is, it creates more questions that we haven't answered. I understand. Oh, no. I totally understand what you're saying. Of course, that's why he's answering it that way. Vayetzi Yaakov. But the question of Medrash was, why didn't say Vayetzi U Yaakov and Kalab whatever? Magmalim Be'achamoyim. So I understand. So the Medrash wants to deal with that question, but he's adopting it for a different reason. Why does it say Vayetzi Yaakov? By the way, we know for sure it wasn't just Yaakov who left. We know that he left. I don't know if I'm going to get there because I'm not sure I've got the time, but we know that Yaakov left with many people, and he left with a lot of gold and silver and jewelry and whatever it was, just like Eliezer, the Eved Avram. And then Eliphaz came and stole it from him. We're going to get to that, well, hopefully, if I've got enough time. Let me tell you what Rabbi Ferber says. Ferber comes up with an incredible pshat. It's a parallel pshat to Rashi. I never want to say that anybody who writes a perish on Chumash wants to disagree with Rashi. Not disagreeing with Rashi. He's just saying that let's go to the pshat of the posuk. What's pshat in the posuk? Let's go back to the posuk. Posuk says two things. Vayetze Yaakov mi be'er shava. Vayelech chorona. It's two parts to the posuk. Yaakov left be'er sheva. And he came to choron. We've got two pieces of information here. And they don't seem to fit in to this particular place. They don't, not necessary. They're not required. We know that he left Be'er Sheva, and we know eventually he came to the house of Lavan. So both of those things are pieces of information that we are either had or we're going to have. So we don't need this pasuk. So what's pshat in the pasuk? You have to look at the psukim. You know, you always have to look at the context of psukim to understand them. The first part is you have to look at what happened immediately after Esav discovered that he'd lost the brochas. He was very angry. What does the posuk say? Vayistoim Esav es Yaakov. He had a grudge against his brother Yaakov. He was very angry. He was very upset. Ala brocha asher birchei oviv. Because his father had given the brocha to Yaakov and not to Esav. Vayoyim Esav beliboy. So what did he say? He thought to himself, Yikrivi yime evel ovi. Once daddy dies, vaharga es Yaakov ochi. I'm going to kill him. I'm going to kill him. Vayugad l'Rivka. Rivka seems to have a bit of a network of spies. So she found out that that's what Esav wanted to do. It's hard to understand because we know that Vayome Esav Beliboy. How did she know? It must be Ruach HaKodesh, right? Es Divrei Esav Benoah HaGodol. So somehow she knew Ruach HaKodesh, she discovered that her son Esav is going to kill Yaakov. Vatishlach vatikra Yaakov Benoah HaKotom vatoymer Elov. Your brother is going to kill you, she tells Yaakov. What should you do? So she instructs him, you need to go to Choron. You need to run away from here. You need to get out of Be'er Sheva. You need to go to Choron. You need to escape. You need to be out of the reach of your brother who wants to kill you. So that was part one. Rivka tells Yaakov Avinu to leave Canaan. What's part two? Part two is a little bit later on. Vayikra Yitzhak el Yaakov, Vayvorechai Sove Tzaveh, Vayom Eloi, Lo Yisikach Isha Mibnois Canaan. Yitzhak says, I don't think it's such a good idea. It's got nothing to do with Esav. He says, I don't think it's such a good idea that you should get married to the Bnois Canaan, because I also didn't marry from the Bnois Canaan. What should you do? Kum Lech Padena Aram, Beisav Besuel Avi Imecha. Go to your grandfather's house, where your mother comes from, and find a wife there. There's Lavan, no doubt he has daughters. Get married to one of those daughters. That's part two. Then we get to this posuk. Vayetzi Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva. Why? Kabeit es imecho. Vayelech chorona, kabeit es avicha. The posuk is telling you that there's two reasons why people leave somewhere or go somewhere. They're either trying to get out of where they've come from, or they're trying to go to where they're going to. So why was Yaakov leaving? He was leaving for both reasons. He was leaving because his mother told him to leave, And he was going because his father told him to go. Says Rav Ferber, the posuk has got nothing to do with what Rashi says. Rashi's got a wonderful pshat and it's a beautiful chazal that doesn't answer all the questions of the posuk. This answers the question as to why this posuk exists in this particular format. Vayetze Yaakov mi be'er shava, vayelech chorono, kabeit es avicha ve'es imecha. Okay, I'm going to now move to the next thing, which is... We've got just enough time, I think, to say this piece. Yes.
We're allowed to ask. Or
oh, can ask whatever you want.
The pasuk tells us already before that Yaakov listened to his father and his mother, and he went to Paden Aharon.
Yes.
The whole of Vayetze Vayelech is already there.
You mean because the pasuk said they listened to his father?
Yishma Yaakov el oviv
elimoy. But why is it together in one pasuk?
El oviv elimoy.
So Rav Ferber wants to put this onto this idea that people leave for different reasons. Some people leave because they want to go somewhere. Some people leave because they want to get out of where they're going. What he wanted to say is for Yaakov, it was equal. Yaakov didn't just leave because he was leaving to run away from Esav, nor did he go because he wanted to get married to a daughter of Lavan. He left equally for both reasons. Because as far as he was concerned, he was honoring his parents by leaving. And this pasuk encapsulates this idea. That's what Rav Ferber says. So whether he's saying the Torah is marich, I don't know exactly how he's presenting it. I accept that it says in the Torah that he already said he's listening to his father to leave to go to Paden Aharon. But here the pasuk wants to summarize this idea that he was leaving equally for both reasons.
I just say, it was Machshon with Esau.
What?
But he thought to kill him. He thought about it,
yes.
He didn't say,
yes.
That's called speaking.
Somehow it was, he had, by the way, it's very few references in the Torah to Esau being wicked. This is one of them. So, you know, Chazal played that out a lot. But here we have a real reference in the Torah to Esav wanting to do something which was connected to halacha. I mean, the only part of it that we see in here that's somehow conscious of the fact that he's doing something wrong is that he says, I'm going to wait until my father dies. So he was sensitive to the fact that he had no justification to kill Yaakov. He's waiting for his father to die, but still Esav wanted to do something terrible. He was in danger of his life, to the extent that when Yaakov Avinu returned, he was nervous that Esav was still angry with him, was going to kill him. Yeah. And he was going to kill him, he came with a whole army. Right. Let me continue to talk about Eliphaz, because this is a remez. This is pure remez. We don't hear these divrei Torah too often, but it's really nice. There's a famous medrash that says that Yaakov had nothing when he got to Lavan's house. I mentioned it already. He came to Lavan's house, he had absolutely nothing with him. And it's hard to understand. Obviously, that's a bit of a problem. Because we know that Eliezer, Eved Avram, when he came to Besuel's house, had tremendous amount of things that he brought with him. As presents, as gifts. When he came to find Rivka. So, why did he have nothing? So, Medrash says, it's a Medrash, also Medrash Rabbah, V'idaba Esav el Eliphaz benoi b'seiser. The Medrash Chazal tell us that he spoke to Eliphaz, and he says to Eliphaz, I'm very, very angry with Yaakov Avinu, and actually, take your sword, take a bit of an army with you, go and find him, cut him off, and kill him. Alright, so that's what happened. Eliphaz was the same as his father, he was a warrior, and he went, he listened to his father, he was obviously, when it came to this, he had very strong kibud of, and he went to go and kill Yaakov. He comes to Yaakov at the border of Canaan, that's what it says, just before he crosses over the border into a new country, and he's about to kill him, and Yaakov says, please, I'm your uncle, what do you think you're doing? Why would you want to kill me? And he says, I'll give you everything I have. And he literally cleaned him out, and he had absolutely nothing. He had the only thing he had was his clothes and his stick, that's all he was left with. And he came to the house of Lavan. He obviously went first to the Yeshiva of Shemon Aver. But then when he came to the house of Lavan, he had absolutely nothing. He came with nothing. Why? Because Eliphaz cleaned him out. By the way, the Medrash says that Eliphaz got back to Esav. Esav was quite angry with him. He says, what do you mean you didn't kill him? He says, well, listen, Yaakov really begged me, and I felt sorry for him. He seems to have had pity on his uncle, and he didn't kill him. So there was a Rav in London called Rav David Meldola. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. His father was Rav Rafael Meldola. They were both born in Livorno in Italy. Rav Rafael Meldola, as if you could look him up, you should look him up, because he's got quite a curious appearance for somebody who was the Chacham and the Rosh Bezdin. He was, he wore a big white wig, he didn't have a beard, but he was a massive Talmud Chacham. You've maybe seen the Sefer Chuppas Chassanim. You ever heard of the Sefer Chuppas Chassanim? We used to learn it, right? Chuppas Chassanim was written by Rav Rafael Meldola. And I wonder if some of the people who would give out the Sefer, if they knew what the author looked like, whether they would be so eager to give out the Sefer. I don't know. I don't want to say anything bad. It was a Moedig Talmud Chacham, and he was a person who had a tremendous hashkofa, and he ran the Sephardi community here in London, and he was nifted in 1828. He had a son called Rav David Meldola, who was also a Moedig Talmud Chacham. He learned in yeshiva. He learned in yeshiva in Livorno. He was very bright. He went to yeshiva as a teenager, and he became a bit of a magid in Italy. When his father died in 1828, he came to London. I'm not sure if he spoke Spanish, Portuguese. They never appointed him as the Chacham. And he was for 25 years. He was the Rosh Bezdin of the Sephardi Bezdin in London. And he sat and learnt, and he had Talmidim in London. There's no pictures of him. He was an incredible Talmud Chacham, and he left over hundreds of manuscripts of his Chiddushei Torah and his Perush on Chumash. And many of them, in among the Sephardim, they're much more into this idea of Ramazim. They're looking for Ramazim in the Torah which can explain, which somehow hint at Chazals in the Torah. He has an incredible remez. I saw here that as I looked online, there's a tshuva to Rav David Meldola in the Sefer of the Orach Laner. You know, he wrote Shailos Tshuvos Binyan Tzion. If you look at Simon Vov, there's a tshuva from to Rav David Meldola, asked him a shaila. It's interesting, he corresponded with Ashkenaz Rabbonim as well, Rav Yaakov Ettlinger. The Orach Laner was a Rav in Altona, Hamburg, and he corresponded with him, which is very unusual. The Pasuk says, Vayetze Yaakov, Yaakov went out, Mi be'er shova vayele chorona. Says Rav David Meldola, it's an acronym, it's Rosh Tevis, Mi be'er shova Vayele Chorono. Miyad bo Eliphaz Rosho, Sheu ben Esav, Vyiten loy kolche loy rak nishar hamako. That's what he said. So this Rav Ferber found when he went through the manuscripts. He went through the manuscripts of Rav David Meldola in the British Library, in the British Museum. He found this. I know that it exists in other places. I find it fascinating that there was a Rav in London who felt the need to write a Perush on Chumash, which was never published. That doesn't come to me as a great surprise. It's in the 1800s, there weren't that many people who were interested in buying a Perush on Chumash. But nevertheless, he wrote it. Rav Ferber found it and included it in his Sefer. I want to tell you one last piece of information. I had more prepared, but I've run out of time. That Rav Ferber, I can stay another 3 hours. Yeah, okay. So, that's what he said. I'm just going by what he said. I'm just going to tell you that Rav Ferber published many Sfarim. So when he first started publishing Sfarim, he published them, he printed them, had them printed in Europe. This was before the Second World War. Then after the Second World War, he lived in Soho in an apartment. He actually had a very difficult time during the Second World War, because all the men of the shul went to the army, and it was all old people and women, and the shul was obviously collapsing, and there was no money, etc. He had to move home, and he writes that half his library was on the street, and then it was raining. I mean, it's London, it's not California. So, and some of his Sfarim became wet, and they were ruined. You have to understand that Rav Ferber had a library, and this is not a guzma, of more than 20,000 books. 20,000 svarim, and eventually got distributed to, you know, open up any auction catalogue generally in the last 15 years, and you usually find that there's some svarim which are being sold, which are being offered on auction, which come from Rav Ferber. Rav Ferber wrote in the memoirs that I have, that after the Second World War, he said, you know, I've got many books that I published, many of the svarim that I published, I've got piles of them in my apartment. And I don't know what to do with them. Everyone in London who wants one already has one. And everybody else has been killed in the Holocaust. Who is ever going to buy my svarim? In fact, he says, who is ever going to read svarim again? That's what he writes in his memoirs, that after the Second World War, and it's hard for us to relate to it, that there was a complete feeling of hopelessness. This was a Talmud Chacham, a Rav, somebody who was, you know, was capable of giving a shir in pilpul and drush, could keep people enthralled for hours, who was an incredible darshan, and he didn't have an audience. And he was convinced that as a result of the Holocaust, there never would be an audience for anything that he ever wrote. So I'm glad whenever I say over Dvar Torah, Divrei Torah from Rav Ferber, and there's an audience that's somewhat interested. You know, I'm always happy whenever I give a shir that if there's no audible snoring. You know, that's, as far as I'm concerned, it's a great mark of success. But Rav Ferber, when he wrote that, could not have imagined that, you know, decades after the Holocaust, there would be not only his svarim would be republished, but that there would be people interested in listening not just to his Divrei Torah, but to Divrei Torah Bichlal, and that the Olam HaTorah would have grown to the extent that it has, and that his town Slabodka is not completely forgotten, and that the Torah of Slabodka and Lithuanian yeshivas and of the manuscripts in the British Library continue to be studied, learnt, and published, and we are zeicha to be part of that rebirth of Klal Yisrael even after the ashes of the Holocaust. Thank you so much. Right. Thank you.
I'm going to go to the next one. Well, I don't know from that.
Not from the
American.